We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 177. The 2017 Yankees have clinched a playoff spot, something nobody saw coming at the beginning of the season, Scott.
Look, this was supposed to be a rebuild. Screw the rebuild. Scratch the plans. The plans are bad. Nobody actually knew the real plans because apparently they were going after it. They made a hell of a run. The division is gone. I mean, let's just forget about it at this point. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Yes, we're going to the playoff game right now, the wild card game. Got to win that game.
The one game.
Got to win it so that we can get to a series, because ultimately that's what we need. We need to get to this series so that this team can actually shine with the way that it's made up. But hell yeah, this is huge. The fact that they overachieved in such a just a superior way this year and actually got to the playoffs is phenomenal. Cheers to a hell of a season already. Hopefully it gets even better.
What a weird freaking season it was. Severe overachievement up until June, and then severe underachievement for 2 months, and then they're playing good baseball again in September. And I think to think back, we were doing this podcast back in 2015 when they clinched that wild card against the Astros. That was an older team. That team also wasn't expected to do anything, and a lot of the veteran guys were playing well. But they were all in a tailspin towards the end of the season. So I think the tone around the Yankees at that point was, we're crossing our fingers for the wild card game. Now, this team is playing well. They're young. They shouldn't be tired as they're going into this wild card game. And they're playing the freaking Minnesota Twins. You got to win that game at home.
Yeah, it's a totally different animal than what happened against the Dallas Keuchel-led Houston Astros when Keuchel was just he was our daddy at that point. He was dominating. I don't think the Yankees had scored a run on him for like 20 innings or 19 innings or something like that up until that wild card game. And then it was much of the same thing. The offense couldn't get going, and we were praying that Tanaka would stay in the game and that it would be a low scoring game, because we knew that the Yankees weren't going to score runs back then. That was the way that it was happening going into that game. It was the tone of that team. This year, totally different animal. The depth is ridiculous. The young studs are all there. And, you know, we are now expecting, no doubt, to get past the freaking Twins and to go on and play with the Indians. So that would be that's the expectation right now. And I can guarantee 95% of Yankee fans agree with me.
The Indians, maybe it'll be the Astros, though. That is not locked up. The number one seed in the American League has not been locked up yet.
Right. Not yet. But it's still looking like it's going to be Cleveland, even though Boston now, when they play Houston, that's two teams. Most likely at that point, probably won't be playing for much.
True. The Astros are two games behind Cleveland for the number one record. They play Boston for four games towards the end of the last four games of the season. That's why I was still holding out hope for the Yankees in the division, because I knew the Astros might have something to play for, and those might be tough games for Boston. But you're right. If Boston has already locked up the division, they're five games up on the Yankees at this point. And like we've been saying, it's not really to the Yankees' fault. They have been playing great baseball in September. The Red Sox have been playing equally as good baseball, and they won again today, so slightly better baseball.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if the other team that you're trying to catch continues to win and doesn't slip when you're actually winning, and you guys start losing, even if when you do lose a game, you both lose it the same day, so there's no ground gained. I mean, it seems like that happened a couple times, and then today being Sunday is when we're recording, was to me the dagger. I mean, you go five games back with, you know, less than a week to play, that you're screwed at that point. There's no way you're catching that team. So look, it's fine. It is what it is. You know, we're in a place that we didn't think we were going to be. So now the Yankees can completely prepare, which might not be the worst thing in the world, in all honesty. I mean, as much as we wanted the division, as much as I wanted the division to beat the Red Sox, at least the Yankees can have a week of preparation and line things up exactly the way they want it to be lined up.
That's very true. And like we've been saying, it's going to be a celebration, celebrating a season that we did not expect coming on September 30th. But, of course, plans slightly change.
Yes. So once the Yankees actually clinched that same day, I got a message on Instagram, someone who was like, hey, I just checked the schedule again, and the game says 1 o'clock. I'm like, come on, man, you can't, not 1 o'clock. So yeah, sure as shit, the Major League Baseball changed the game and moved the game ahead, not back, but ahead. Yankees said that it's never been done, won't be done, can only be pushed to 7 o'clock. Oh no, Major League Baseball apparently does whatever they want, and they moved it to 1 o'clock. So now, the September 30th game, the outing, is a 1 o'clock game. So we are making plans now. We're shifting things around. We are adjusting. And we're still good with the brewery beforehand. Maybe some other plans I'm working on, just a few phone calls I'm making to some places around the stadium. If I could bring it closer, the pregame closer to the stadium, I will, just because I know it's going to be a lot earlier. So I'm working on that. Hopefully I'll have something resolved tomorrow, Tuesday at the latest. But everybody who has purchased tickets, I will. You'll be looking for an email from me. If you have not purchased tickets yet, definitely go grab them. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a celebration of the season. Basically, we're all going to go out, have a great time, and then just get ready for the playoffs. I mean, we're going to be loud. Doesn't matter what the situation is for that game. We're going to be loud and cheering these boys on because 2 days after that, 3 days after that, they're playing a wild card game, and that's going to be huge.
I expect that Saturday to be the final tune-up for the regulars because I could see Girardi giving all the regulars the day off on Sunday, give them 2 full days off before that wild card game. He's not going to give them 3 days off, though, because when you're going into a do-or-die game, essentially a game 7, you don't want guys to be rusty. So I expect the full lineup or close to a full lineup to be playing on that Saturday while we're there.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, if you're looking at a couple of guys that are out, you know, the people who are behind them are pretty fun to watch as well. That's the nice thing about this team is that everybody's there. You know, if you're not playing Brett Gardner, probably Clint Frazier's going to be in, you know, and people are pumped to see that too. So look, there's a number of things that can happen, but you're right. They have to stay sharp for a Tuesday game. So no doubt they're going to continue to play. You can't break rhythm at that point.
And at the very least, we can heckle Jose Bautista on his way out the door of Toronto.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what we'll be doing. We will be in his ear all game long.
Well, he got quite the ovation up in Toronto this weekend. I mean, it makes sense. He's been he's been the face of the Blue Jays the last few years, especially that bat flip a couple seasons ago. But I think it's funny because they haven't announced that they're not re-signing him. He hasn't announced that he's retiring or anything. It's just everyone is acknowledging the fact that he's no longer going to be a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah, the writing's on the wall. I mean, they didn't really want him this year. That was like a last-minute decision. Nobody wanted Bautista, and they had to be like, okay, just come back for one more year. Maybe you can, you know, make something of yourself and prove that you're not over the hill and you can get a contract somewhere else. But this is probably going to be it. So I think everybody understood the situation, and they're definitely not going to be bringing him back. I mean, he still gets paid a good amount of money for a one-year deal, and the Blue Jays are going in a different direction at this point.
Yeah. So the Yankees wrapped up their road schedule this weekend in Toronto. And I thought it was kind of an important game, not only because you're still going for the division on Sunday, but had they won, they would have been a game over 500 on the road this season. And instead, they're a game under 500 on the road. So just for, I guess, aesthetics purposes, that's kind of annoying, the fact that they played under 500 ball. They're a better than under 500 baseball team on the road.
Yeah, no, it's interesting when you look at that because I think what started that entire tailspin was the series out in California. I mean, always California series. Yeah, the West Coast trips were ones that always, whenever I see them on a calendar, you know, I'm shaking in my boots because, I mean, ever since I was a kid, going to the West Coast was a nightmare. And the Yankees have really, there have been a couple years, I know I've been, I forget which years it were, but people have tweeted me that, no, at this point, they did great. There are a couple years that there are exceptions, but for the most part, for the majority of the past 20 years, 20 to 30 years, the Yankees have had a very difficult time on the West Coast, and that's where it all started, the road trip on the West Coast. And yeah, when I looked down at the numbers and I saw that that was the case, that they were going to be a game under or over 500, I was surprised, actually. I didn't think it was all that close. I thought they were over 500.
It all boiled down to that one moment when the timeline skewed, that second game in Anaheim in June, when Chris Carter dropped the baseball from Didi Gregorius. A run scored. It was an error. It extended the inning. Sabathia went down with a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. Tyler Clippard came in and barfed all over himself, and then it was all downhill from there. And the snowball did not stop rolling down the hill, essentially, until mid-August.
That was a hell of a snowball. That was an insane amount of things. Wasn't that when Gleyber Torres also got hurt?
Yeah, he got hurt like 3 or 4 days after that.
Yeah, so it was just like hit after hit after hit. After having such a great start, all of a sudden, Chris Carter, the reason for that entire snowball, was closing his eyes, closing the glove all too soon. It was just, you know, it's a microcosm of what happened that entire stretch. So it was a bad time, but guess what? The Yankees prevailed. They moved past it. Now they're in the playoffs. So I'm loving it. The fact that they came back from that also, let's talk about that for a second. The fact that they had such a bad middle of the season, and it went through different phases of the game too. The starters were terrible at one point. The relievers were terrible at one point. The offense was terrible at one point. Aaron Judge was terrible at one point, if anybody can say that out loud, because he's like the golden child now. This guy, I mean, the entire team had problems in the middle of the season, and they overcame it. They said, put that in the past. They came back out when the time was, you know, come end of August, beginning of September, and they started playing really good baseball. They all got healthy again, and I think that shows a lot about this team, and it does show a lot about Joe Girardi and the way that he manages team, I think, because he got his guys out of it, and he did have this Yankees team playing very good baseball down the stretch.
That's a good point, because a young team, once they hit the first speed bump in the road, a lot of times will just fold. This team didn't fold, and that's why I think it was completely warranted why they celebrated the wild card berth on Saturday. A lot of people chirping on social media saying, the Yankees are better than this. The Yankees should not celebrate a wild card berth. They didn't even clinch the number one wild card seed. They didn't clinch a division. What the hell are they celebrating for? Baseball is a long fucking season. It's 6 months plus spring training, 162 games. You get to that point where you know you're going to the playoffs, relax, pop some champagne, pour Budweiser's on Meredith's head, have some freaking fun. I loved it. I hate the people that say that they shouldn't have celebrated. Yeah, maybe the 90s Yankees wouldn't have celebrated a wild card berth, or the 90s Yankees didn't celebrate when they advanced to the playoffs because the goal was to win another World Series. But Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Luis Severino, all these guys, this is their first taste of this. Of course they need to be celebrating this.
It's a different time now. Someone was tweeting me about this and asking if I agreed with it, if I thought they were. And I said, yeah, they probably will. I'm like, I don't really care for it. But at the same time, it doesn't bother me anymore. And then I did hashtag get off my lawn, because that's kind of like the old school thing. Like, don't celebrate until you've actually like truly achieved something. I get it. I understand it. But it's a totally different era at this point. One, first of all, when back in the day when people were clinching, first of all, there weren't as many. You were clinching a division win. You know, if there was a wild card, there was one. The celebrations were definitely kept more quiet. There weren't as many cameras. There wasn't social media. There wasn't the internet the way it is. It's just, there's a different time in that sense, so we see it a lot more. It's probably sponsored. I guarantee there were sponsors because of the, somebody was probably sponsoring the tarps that were up in the lockers. Someone was probably sponsoring the raincoats that were on some of the Yes Network, the ponchos that were on some of the Yes Network guy thing. So it's a totally different animal at this point. Every single person, every single team who clinched anything did the exact same celebration, if you'd noticed. They all had the, take 17, which I think is so stupid, by the way. Can we be a little bit more creative? Every single one of them had the exact same slogan on their shirts. So if you don't think that whoever the company is, that Majestic, I think, is the one who does those, I guarantee they had paid for those shirts to be in there for the post-game celebrations when X team clinched. It's part of the business now. So the fact that these guys were like, okay, their champagne's going to be there. The tarps are already up. They got goggles for me. Let's celebrate. I mean, what 20-something-year-old kid who's got champagne in front of them, beers in front of them, cameras, did the expectation to spray champagne and beer all over another person without getting in trouble, who wouldn't do that?
It's just unrealistic to think that their season started in early February. That's a lifetime ago. Hell, Chris Carter and Tyler Clippard seem like a lifetime ago, never mind spring training. And the fact that they're at this point, I think, is totally okay to celebrate. Now, maybe you can argue that in 2015, when you had guys like A-Rod and Mark Teixeira and all those veterans celebrating, you're saying, well, they've been there before. Maybe they don't need to celebrate a wild card berth. But like I said, again, all these young kids, this is what they need to get used to this. Have some fun. Can people just allow fun to happen? Why does everyone need to be a fun police?
Well, let me tell you the other side of this, because I understand where some people are coming from. Because you're saying is they should get used to this. So what that means to me is they should get used to celebrating to get into the wild card.
Like, no, that's not what I meant.
But that's what's taken. I mean, that's what they're doing is they're celebrating to get to the bare minimum in the playoffs. Like, and I understand it. I'm not against them celebrating. It is what it is. I really don't care. I want them to have fun because I think you play baseball better when you're having fun and loose. So celebrate away. I think when it's an older generation thing, there's no doubt about it. There's no young people, not many of them, are saying don't celebrate, bah humbug. It's everybody who's a little bit older. So I understand where they're coming from. At the same time, when you're looking at like old celebrations, when you look at the 90s championships and you look at them, those celebrations in the dugout look exactly the same as what we saw last night. So when you're looking at that and you're like, they won the World Series, they have a dynasty, they're celebrating. Okay. Well, you see these guys, these young guys celebrating the exact same way, for a wild card berth. Like, I understand it. For personally, it doesn't bother me.
Okay, hypothetical situation. The 2018 Yankees clinch another wild card berth. Maybe you don't celebrate as hard for that one because it's a lot of guys hopefully will be there again, like Judge and Sanchez and Severino and Castro and Didi. All these guys are going to be on the roster again next year. So maybe you have a little bit of the attitude of we've been here before. Now we have another mission to accomplish. But right now, I have no problem with it. And I think anyone that does is kind of an asshole. So.
Well, the thing about it is that you're not going to have that opportunity. You're not going to have that choice because, like I said, I'm telling you, they're all sponsored. All this stuff is a business move as well. So the champagne's there. The tarps are there. It's not like the players are saying, oh, we're going to celebrate. No. This stuff is there for you to celebrate. Now celebrate. Here, take this. Celebrate. It's going to happen every single time. They're probably going to have some freaking champagne when they win the wild card game, if they win the wild card game.
No, I don't think so. You got to turn around and go play Cleveland or go play Houston.
There'll be some sort of a thing. I don't think so.
I'm thinking back to teams that the last couple of years that won. I don't remember teams celebrating. They were jumping up and down on the mound, sort of congratulating one another. But I don't remember popping champagne for that. That would be stupid, in fact, because you win the wild card on a Tuesday. You got to start a division series in Cleveland on a Thursday. No thanks. I don't want to be dealing with that residual hangover.
I mean, it's not like they're drinking half of it. Most of it's going all over the place. But
dude, did you see some of those Instagram? Did you see Castro's Instagram live video last night? He had the drunk eyes.
Yeah, I mean, Castro's going to get into it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, some of these guys I know are going to get into it. You know, Tyler Wade is partying his ass off. I'm sorry.
Good for him. September call-ups can party all they want. They don't really have anything to worry about.
I get it, you know, because when you're looking at the World Series championship celebration in the clubhouse, it looks exactly the same. That's all. It does. It's anticlimactic. It looks exactly the same. So I don't know. As a player, honestly, like, I like to celebrate, but sometimes maybe it is over the top for clinching a wild card spot.
So I think you celebrate twice as a team. You celebrate when you go to the playoffs, and then you celebrate if you win the World Series. Actually,
but
maybe
they,
three
but
times
that's
if
not
you
what
win
happens.
The pennant. If you win the pennant, they don't always celebrate after a wild card. I don't think they celebrate after a wild card or a division.
I got to go back to like check social media's accounts of teams that have that won each round. I swear to God, they all
each
do the same
round
thing.
Each round is stupid. But if you win your league, if you win the American League, you're going to the World Series. You win the pennant. I think you can celebrate.
Look, again, I don't really care either way. I'm just kind of talking through this because I know that there's people on both sides of the fence.
Well, it was fun. It was fun to see the guys celebrating.
It was fun to watch them. I think it's funny when you see the personality show in those types of situations. There's no doubt.
Right, because you remember a couple years back in the 2015 one, John Ryan Murphy came out of nowhere, won the MVP of the celebration, just dumping champagne all over Brian McCann, sticking his head into the camera shot of the guys being interviewed. And we had guys like that. We had, like you said, the personality show through that you don't always see.
Yeah, there's definitely that side of that's what's beautiful about social media now, is because you can actually see a lot more of the real person behind the baseball player. And you definitely see that type of thing. I mean, seeing Tanaka just like sneaking up on people, like drinking like one sip of the beer and then just nonchalantly dumping a beer on Sonny Gray's head in the middle of an interview. I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating that he's back there just opening this beer so slowly, like just casually, and then just goes up and just pours on him nonchalantly, and you get this like stupid little grin and he walks away. I think that type of thing is funny because, one, you don't see that from Tanaka ever. Tanaka feels like a 40-year-old man to me. He doesn't seem like a 27-year-old, 28-year-old kid at all.
29,
whatever. He feels 40, maybe 45. He definitely feels older than me. That's just the way I look at him. I see that guy. I'm like, that guy's older than me. But he's not. He's not older than me. And he acts like that. But then you go and see in a clubhouse when he's pouring a beer over someone's head. And like, okay, he's a kid.
Yeah, that's true. And he did it three different occasions. It's a little interesting for him to have that attitude after he had another dog shit start on Friday.
Oh, there it is. Everybody can celebrate, but Tanaka, no celebrations.
That's true. Tanaka needed terrible. To be in there doing work. He needed to be looking at film.
Yeah.
Maybe he could sip a beer as he was looking at film and stretching out his arm, getting ready for his next start.
How dare he pour a beer on Sonny Gray when Sonny Gray went out and did his goddamn job?
Yeah, it was fun. And Bird starting the circle around Meredith, dumping beer all over her head. That was, I've seen the start of that video a number of times on the internet. It ended a little differently for this time, but all I'm saying is I've seen the start of that video.
I'm going to throw this out there, and I have no idea anything about their personal situations, but I can see Greg Bird and Meredith Marakovich having a very happy relationship.
Ooh.
With a lot of kids and being very happy and living happily ever after.
You think there's a little bit more to it?
I think maybe that was a little bit of a flirtation. I think maybe that was a little bit of Greg Bird being his awkward. We know he's awkward, right? Bad jokes. We've heard this. Ref Steiner kind of gave us the lowdown of Greg Bird when he was on the show. I don't know. I think that was maybe his maybe one of his, like, you know, a fifth grader like punching the girl because he likes her. I think that's what Greg Bird was doing.
That's how Greg Bird flirts. He's that kind of guy.
He dumps spears on their head.
At least she wasn't wearing a poncho. I give her credit for that.
Yeah, she was talking about this in game. They were asking her if she had prepared because they know if they see, this is the thing. It was all set up. If the if they did win and they did clinch, that, you know, was she prepared? And she actually went. She had said that she went and bought a dress for the occasion, a black dress, so that they could be soaking wet and have no, you know, issues. So they were prepared for it.
So do you think that the Yankees had any say in when they were celebrating? Because say, they were asked, do you want to celebrate if you clinched the wild card or if you clinched the number one wild card seed? Because maybe they could have waited until they at least know they're playing a home game in the wild card. It's very likely they are. Like we said, they're 4.5 up on Minnesota right now. It's 7 to play. Something horribly wrong would have to happen if they don't play that game at Yankee Stadium. But do you think they were asked, or do you think they had any say in that?
I don't think they had much say in it, but I do think that maybe the situation also could have dictated what happened. So let's say that the Yankees were to have clinched on a loss, but everybody else lost too, and just then it was a numbers game and they clinched. You're not going to see a celebration at that point, right? Most likely not.
Well, the Red Sox celebrated when they lost a couple. Was that last year? Remember Teixeira hit the walk-off home run? But because another team lost, because Baltimore or Toronto lost, the Red Sox clinched the division and they celebrated even though they got walked off on.
But that was a division win, right? Like they won the division.
Division win.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just saying maybe the situation would have dictated that if they had won, that they celebrate. If they didn't win, maybe they celebrate when they get the one seed for the wild card. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm completely speculating. I don't really know what goes on behind the scenes. I don't know that it's 100% sponsored. If I were to make a bet, I would place a lot of money on that. Yes, it was sponsored because they all had those T-shirts. That's a sponsorship right there. So I don't know. I guarantee some of it's already dictated to what they have to do, though.
Will we ever hear Aaron Judge acknowledge the fact that he's had a pretty good season for a rookie? Because he was, again, coy. Typically coy for Aaron Judge, very Derek Jeter-esque when he was asked about his season and celebrating for the wild card.
I think you'll get an answer similar to this. I think once the season is over and done with and he's looking back, because that's when it'll happen. It's not going to happen before that. It'll happen in the offseason or maybe in spring training next year. He'll say, I did some things that I wanted to do. I achieved some of the goals that I wanted to do, but there's always work to get done. I'm working to get better. I'm happy with the way that last season went, but I'm striving to get better every single day.
And he'll also throw in the fact that depending on how the Yankees finish the season, if they don't win the World Series, he'll say, but the ultimate goal is to win a World Series, and we did not accomplish that this year.
Team guy.
Love it.
Yeah.
Judge looks, he hit two more home runs on Sunday, 47 and 48. So he's one behind McGuire for the rookie record of 49.
Asterisk on the 48 Aaron Judge home runs, because he does have 49.
He has 50. Don't you remember?
There's
three
two
of them. No, three. Because three. Melky stole one, Jackie Bradley Jr. stole one, and then
I'm not talking about the legitimate stolen ones. I mean, those were home run balls that were legitimately taken back by defenders. And the Melky one was 100% not going out still, I believe this.
I think it was.
No, you're blind. There's no way that the ball was not going out. The Jackie Bradley Jr. was 100% going out. That dude, that was a ridiculous catch. No, the umpire stole a home run from him. That is 49.
That's true. Remember when we were talking about how, oh, maybe, what if Aaron Judge finishes the season with like 72 home runs? That was back in the day when he was on pace for like 75 home runs. We're like, no, if he finishes 72, there's going to be an asterisk.
Yeah, I know. This is the problem here. But no, I mean, it's two more. The dude's locked back in, which is very good news for the Yankees.
That's what I was going to say. His swing, he's making hard contact again. So even outs are being hit hard, which is awesome to see. He's still taking his walks. He leads the league in walks. He leads the league in home runs. And I think OPS or near the top in OPS. But his at-bats look better. He was having terrible at-bats. He looked in between. If it was a breaking ball, he couldn't pull the trigger on fastballs. He was taking down the middle on 3-2 counts. You're like, Judge, what the hell are you looking for? It's a fastball thigh high. How do you not swing at that? You're not seeing that as much anymore. And if Judge is getting back locked back in for a potential wild card game, then that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that is awesome, because especially if he's having those good at-bats and he's hitting the ball hard, if the game is at Yankee Stadium, which it's going to be, then even his misses can go out of the stadium. We've seen that, you know, and he's getting back to that form. I mean, I was looking up his numbers over the last month. Just over the last month, he's at 274, 9 home runs, 20 RBIs. You're looking over the last week to 2 weeks. Last week, he's hit over 400 with 3 home runs, 6 RBIs. So the guy is hitting the ball to the ballpark. His batting average is going back up. I mean, he's at 279 right now. You're just seeing much better at bats. You're definitely seeing him go with the ball and go the other way, which was the approach for the first half of the season. So I don't know what happened to get him off that approach. I don't know if that left shoulder was nagging at some point, and that's why he wasn't able to, you know, completely close on the ball, because it was something was bothering him. Very well could be. We'll probably never know until a book is written in 20 years. But the fact is that maybe everything's feeling better, or his head's back in the, I don't know what it was, but he's going the other way again. He's and that's where his power alley is, because when he is going that way with the outside pitch, he's still pulling the ball on the inside, and both sides is going out of the ballpark. So this is very, very good news.
Don't you know that the home run derby ruined him?
Yeah, it did. There's no doubt of it. Well, for a while, there was getting us. As much as we said that the home run derby did not ruin him, we're like, oh, shit, mate. Maybe the home run derby did ruin him.
if it comes out after the season that he maybe tweaked his shoulder in the home run derby, I'm going to be extremely upset.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I really do believe something was going on with that.
With the shoulder?
With the shoulder. I don't know if it had with the home run derby, but I think something was going on with the shoulder. And honestly, it does make sense if you think about the approach of the plate and the way that he was opening up. When you open up like that, your front side is not as engaged, whereas you're closed off, your front side is a lot more engaged with your swing. So I don't know. This is me speculating again, but it does make sense.
I think it's the perfect storm. It was the perfect storm of issues for Judge. Maybe it was a little bit injury. Maybe it was a little bit rust coming out of the All-Star break. And maybe it was a little bit the fact that he's a
freaking
rookie.
He's a freaking rookie.
Like, it happens.
And
to rookies.
He was hitting for the freaking triple crown in the first half.
Yeah.
Maybe things got a little big for him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a human being. He is. As much as people don't believe it when you look at him, he's still a human being. And things can happen. And things can get between the ears. And those things can affect the way you play and affect your mechanics and a whole bunch of things. So, yeah. And the league also made adjustments. So maybe it was his turn to make a readjustment. So I see your adjustment with my adjustment. And now he's back.
Right. You can say all the right things in the media, but still, like you said, what's going on between your own ears can be, oh, I'm hitting for the triple crown. Holy shit, I didn't think I was going to be here. Oh my God, what am I going to do in the second half? I need to keep hitting for average. And then it snowballs on you, like we said, the snowball effect. And it kind of got away from him for a while. He hit about 180 for 2 months.
When you start seeing your name next to all of these like ridiculous Yankees like Babe Ruth, and you're passing Joe DiMaggio, and your name is up there with Ruth and Gehrig and some of these numbers, and you're just seeing all of these like ridiculous Yankee names, and your name is there too now, and you look down and you're like, holy shit, how did I get here? I was striking out 50% of the time last year, and now I'm mentioning this because I'm having such a ridiculous year. You're right. All of these things can happen. And how old is he? 25, 26?
25.
I mean, I was a worthless human being at 25 years old. This guy was hitting for the triple crown in the first half. And amongst the names of Ruth and Gehrig and DiMaggio, for God's sakes. Yeah, maybe some of that got to him, along with a little bit of a tweak of an injury. Maybe.
It's kind of funny because we, as we do this podcast, we live and die with every single game, and we're following the team so closely. I've always followed the team closely, but it's especially we just like I think sports radio guys do. You go up and down with the team. You go up and down with the players. When Judge is slumping, we harped on the fact that he was slumping, and we were trying to figure out what was going on. When he was hitting for the Triple Crown, we were like, holy shit, he's hitting for the Triple Crown. But when we are going to look at his season, and you look at it in the context of a rookie, he's going to hit around 270. He's going to hit close to 50 home runs. Maybe he'll reach 50 home runs with over 100 RBIs and over 100 walks. Those numbers are gaudy. So it's just the big picture thing. We have to take a step back and look at how good he's been. But when we are dissecting it, it's the 2 months of lull. And I'm sure there's seasons across the board where guys have had that, right? We just don't know because we didn't follow them as closely. But I'm sure there's times that it's happened for Yankees or whoever else. They go into a month-long slump, and you just don't know why they're in a month-long slump.
It happens all the time, especially in baseball. Baseball is probably the most... of the sports, probably the most streaky. I mean, you can get absolutely down when you have another person that's, it's basically a one-on-one sport. Yes, it's a team sport, but at the end of the day, it's a one-on-one. It's you versus a guy that's throwing 100 miles an hour at you, a baseball at you. So when you have to, it's, I think it's the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a baseball, especially when it's moving at ridiculous speeds and it's making different, angular motions very close to you at high speeds as well. It's the hardest thing to do in sports, in my opinion. And when you're trying to do that over a very long time and stay consistent for that entire time, it's nearly impossible. Now we're talking about a rookie. So,
True. Speaking of that hardest thing, that reminded me of a conversation that I heard when the Indians won their 22-game win streak. Do you think it's harder to win 22 in baseball or 22 in another sport?
Baseball. I think baseball is the hardest thing to do, to put that many games, because they're playing every single day.
And the pitcher changes.
The pitcher changes. You go to different places. You're playing every single day, literally. No other sport plays every day.
Right. Yeah, in hockey, and
for
if
as
you
long
have
as
a win streak.
In outdoors, in the heat.
Right. If you have a win streak in hockey or whatever it is, you have the same goalie, same quarterback in football. So, yeah, I agree. Friday, Tanaka did not look good. It was, he's been a little shaky his last couple starts. He gave up 7 earned runs, and I was looking at his season. It was the 5th time this season he had given up 7 earned runs or more. That's pretty insane to think about how good he has been in his career, but giving up 7 earned runs in one game is basically just getting absolutely destroyed. He's been destroyed 5 times this season.
So when you were looking those up, we haven't talked about this, but how many of them were in the first half of the season? Because I forget.
If I had to guess, most of them. I don't think he's given up 7 earned runs in the second half until Friday.
So we're seeing a guy that has turned a corner, it seems, and then came out and just put up a complete stinker as far as an outing goes. I mean, it was terrible. So I don't know. It's tough for me to completely the problem I saw honestly was the home runs again, and at this point he was mentally out of it. I thought like during that for that Ryan Goins home run, that grand slam 0-2 count, and he just leaves a ball over the plate for Ryan freaking Goins to hit. Really, like, no, you cannot do that. I'm sorry, you as the quote number one pitcher that was on this team getting paid as much as you do, Masahiro Tanaka, as a man, you cannot leave that 0-2 pitch out there for Ryan freaking Goins to hit out of the ballpark. You just can't do it.
As a pitcher, you might be able to do that, but not as a man.
No, not as a guy. And you sure shit cannot be sneaking up behind Sonny Gray and pouring a beer on his head after you give up an 0-2 grand slam to Ryan freaking Goins.
That's what I'm saying. Happen. 3 home runs allowed on Friday. I don't know what his season total is, but it's probably close to how many home runs Aaron Judge has.
It does make sense to the fact that home runs are up everywhere, so there's going to be more home runs against pitchers. This is probably a little bit more than you'd want to see as an escalator, but
it does
make sense that his home runs are up because he is susceptible to the home run ball even before. We just usually saw it with not very many runners. The runners were certainly not on first, second, and third, and usually it was not a Ryan Goins type.
So here's the problem. He's going to make a playoff start if they make the division series. And again, he was not able to battle. He gave up in that game to Toronto. So what happens if he doesn't have his ace stuff in a division series game in game two against Cleveland? He's just going to give up, and he's going to give up three run and grand slams to Santana and Encarnacion. Is that what we're going to get from him? Or is he going to maybe battle for once in his life?
Well, I think he's going to give the opportunity to battle, but he's not going to give too many opportunities. I think Joe will have a very quick hook if he sees something that he doesn't like, because there's definitely been a pattern with Tanaka giving up home runs. A lot of his body language screams that he is just not there. I mean, you can see it on his face, on the way that he carries himself after some of these home runs. It's not good. And I do believe, as a pitcher, body language does tell a lot of the story. I mean, we saw it with Michael Pineda. I mean, it was the entire story. The guy was bipolar. You didn't know what the hell was going to come on that next pitch. You had no idea. Tanaka does wear his emotions to me when he's doing poorly. He gets very frustrated, and you can see it almost like he's just, I don't want to say given up, but you can just see the frustration all over him. Here's the deal.
He gets discouraged. He gets down on himself. That's what it looks like.
Is that he doesn't need to be that number one ace guy anymore. That's not where he is. You just said division series. This is after a wild card where Severino is going to pitch. So he would be probably the number three guy at this point. Sonny Gray probably taking the ball in the number one, unless Joe gets all sentimental and puts Tanaka on there, which I could 100% see happening. But
you think he'll put Tanaka instead of Sonny Gray if they make it to... We actually have a mailbag question coming up about this, which we can get into more depth. But you could see him going with a game one with Tanaka?
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Joe Girardi, no doubt. I think we're going to see how the situation plays out. You know, what time the game is, when the game is, where the game is, whether we're talking about Houston or Cleveland. I don't know. I think whatever the factors of that series will determine who goes first and who goes second, how they line up for the remaining games of that series as well. So I don't think he's against it. I think Joe would do it, and there's no doubt. I think he would do it, and he would tell everybody he has confidence.
You said earlier that if he has a start like this in the playoffs, then Girardi will just pull him. Why did Joe leave him out there to give up the grand slam on Friday? That game, they needed to win that game. They were still in the division hunt at that point. They were four games out of the division. That was a must-win game for them.
Yeah, I definitely think he left him out there too long in that game. Again, Girardi does things. I think he sometimes has a little bit too much confidence in some of his guys, whereas you see guys like... you know, CeCe, I mean, he's pulled CeCe a number of times very early. It doesn't seem like he's done that with Tanaka. I think when we're talking about the playoffs, it's a different animal, especially when you have the bullpen in a short series. I think it's a totally different animal than even the situation that he was put in on Friday.
It's probably a moot point at that time because the Yankees weren't hitting. And it was already, 4-1 at that point?
I think it was 4-1 at that point, yeah.
Yeah, but you had an off day on Thursday, so your bullpen was completely rested. Maybe you yank Tanaka after the fifth inning and you just send Chad Green or David Robertson out there and say, we're still in this game. We got to win this game. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it matters too much right now. In all honesty, at this point,
it doesn't matter at this point because... they clinch the wild card and the Red Sox pretty much are going to clinch the division. But if you think about that game on Friday, it did matter.
I don't think Girardi has the mentality that he's going to pull out every stop to win in these games. I don't think he was in that mentality yet. I think he was going to let this team play out how it did. Obviously, he's going to put his best foot forward. But I don't think he saw the urgency to catch the Red Sox, honestly. I think he sees the urgency mostly to get his guys ready, make sure that everybody's in the right place, make sure that people are healthy, make sure that the lineup is setting up to the way he wants it, the rotation setting up to the way he wants it, the bullpen setting up to the way he wants it. I feel like that still was his priority, even though everybody's talking about the division. I have a feeling a lot of them were like, okay, if it works out and we play our asses off like we are anyway, and if it works out and the Red Sox are losing, then we can start pushing it further in the week. But at this point, we're just going to play the games.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the Yankees' night anyway because they had a hidden ball trick pulled on them.
That was ridiculous.
I don't think he was out. No, I don't think Frazier was out.
He was out. His foot was off the bag.
I think it was too close for the umpire to call that.
I think it's so dumb how the even in like that was that reviewed? I don't remember if that was reviewed or not.
I don't think it was. First of all, I wasn't watching at that point. I had Seinfeld tickets that night, and it was lucky that I wasn't home for this game because it was infuriating. But so I was following on Twitter, and I just saw hidden ball trick, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me! How often does a hidden ball trick happen?
Yeah, I mean the tag was on him. The ball was placed on him the entire time, and he did a roundabout, faced the outfield, took his foot off the bag. I mean, he was out. There was no doubt. It was, you know, I think those plays at this point are pretty ridiculous. Like, some people will say it's a savvy move for Toronto. I don't know. It's Bush League shit, honestly. But it's also, at the same time, like, really, you're going to fall for that shit?
It's Bush League until your team does it.
Then it's awesome. It goes both ways. It goes both ways. Like, it's dumb to do it. It's really dumb to get caught by it.
Yes. Absolutely dumb. That was, like, the first thing they taught you in Little League is don't get fooled by the hidden ball trick.
Well, and also, especially now, like, stay on the bag. Always stay on the bag no matter what, because the amount of cameras that are on you, the reviews, stay on the bag. Always stay on the bag.
I just thought the ump was a little bit quick to call him out. That's all.
Well, either way, he was out. He knew it. He had egg on his face for damn sure.
Severino on Saturday before the game hit with a line drive in batting practice, went down like he got shot by a sniper from the fourth level. Everything is fine with him, though. But when I saw the video of him going down, rolling on the floor, looked like he was in agony, I was like, well, there goes the season. Of course, this is how the 2017 Yankees season ends, with Severino going down in batting practice, just like Montgomery got hit. How the Yankees have this happen to them twice in one season, it's so typical Yankees, but looks like we dodged a bullet.
Yeah, thankfully. I think I saw the guys making fun of him. I think Didi was making fun of him with his antics the way he went down, so it seems like nothing is wrong and everything's all good. But yeah, what are the freaking odds that two of our young starting pitchers get hit by a batting practice ball? That's ridiculous.
I would like to volunteer to be the guy that is in the outfield shadowing all the important pitchers to make sure they don't get hit with a line drive during batting practice.
I don't know if I trust you to be that guy, to tell you the truth. I need some guy who's 100% dependable and I know will catch that ball. I'm just not sure. I haven't seen you. I don't know. I can't talk. I can't speak to your catching abilities. I've never seen you catch a ball before.
I'll take a ball in the face for him. I'll just dive in front of it. I might not catch it, but it's not going to hit him in the back. I'll tell you that.
But you might misjudge the ball. How am I supposed to know? What if it's knuckling? I don't know. There's a million things that can happen. I need to see you in the field before I can give you that job.
Can we at least agree that they need to have a guy? The Yankees need a guy for that.
Yes, I think we should have a guy if we're out there. Let's have some guys out there shagging balls, or at least yelling heads up, Severino. Oh yeah, you know, vamos, the fucking ball is coming at you. Somebody give this guy a heads up, for God's sake.
Well, he's also got his back to the infield, which is stupid. Just like falling for a hidden ball trick, you can't have your back to the infield. Okay, hidden ball trick is the first thing you learn. Back to the infield is the second thing you learn.
We should use some common sense when we're talking about hidden ball tricks and batting practice. Let's not be out there and expect that the ball's not going to hit us when there's a dude just hitting batting practice balls, spraying them all over the field. Maybe that could hit you. Maybe. Yeah.
Sonny Gray pitched, got the win. I don't think he looked as sharp as he had in the past for the Yankees. It kind of makes you a little bit concerned because both him and Tanaka were pitching so well in August and early September. And now as we're approaching a playoff, we hope they both get playoff starts. They're hiccuping a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I'm not concerned of it because the guy still pitched to six innings. He gave up a run. Yet he dodged, I think he dodged some problems. I mean, he still had three walks, giving up some hits.
Three walks. Gardner made two spectacular plays in left field that saved runs both times.
Yeah, the guy was not on his complete sharp game. I just can't get worried about these things yet. I don't know. I feel like the next day he could have a gem. I have confidence in his ability in his when I look at Sonny Gray as a pitcher and what he's done in the past in big games, I have confidence in that. So I don't think I'm not really taking this start and saying, oh, we're in deep shit. We're in trouble. We got to really watch what Sonny Gray's doing at this point because we're getting close to the playoffs and he's going to have the ball. First of all, we got to get through the first game. I will say that. We keep talking about, like, further on. Not getting ahead of myself, nor are we, but we have to talk about it.
Yeah, we kind of are.
A little bit. But
if we lose to the Twins, we're going to be ape shit. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, we can't lose to the Twins. I got to tell you, we cannot lose to the Twins. They don't even want to, their fans don't even want to play us. They would rather go home. Did you see that poll?
I did.
Did you see the poll?
This yeah, I also questioned that poll. So we were tweeted, Scott and I were included on a tweet that said, out of Minnesota fans polled, would you rather play the Yankees in the wild card game or just not make the wild card in general? Not make the wild card in general won, which is maybe the biggest bitch.
No, it didn't win. It didn't win. They wanted to play the Yankees, but it was like 51-49%. It was way too close. It was entirely too close.
That's winning.
That is winning, I guess. But the fact is that we cannot lose to the Minnesota Twins. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is the team that cannot get us out of the playoffs this year is the Minnesota Twins. That just cannot happen.
Maybe we just name this episode of the podcast, we can't lose to the Twins.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, that cannot happen. Sonny, I don't want to put myself in that situation of that happening. I really don't. It's making me upset. Getting very upset.
This is where we were going before we got down this tangent. Sonny Gray, Sabathia, and Tanaka will all get one more start the last seven games of the season before they potentially make a division series start, which we all hope they do.
Yeah, and all three of those guys are the ones that you're going to see, four pitchers that are making starts as long as everything goes well, and you're going to see those three mentioned, and then Severino. So CeCe's definitely in there. I think Joe has a ton of confidence in CeCe right now. I have a lot of confidence. I have a lot of confidence in a playoff game with CeCe Sabathia, in all honesty. Probably as high of confidence that I would have as a lot of these guys, maybe even number two.
That's actually good.
Because of his makeup.
Yeah, so again, we have a mailbag question that gets into all of it. But right now, if you had to rank them after Severino, who you have the most confidence in, Tanaka, CC, Sonny Gray, how would you order it?
So I'm going with, if I were to make this schedule and I'm the manager, I'm putting Sonny Gray in that number two spot, but it's very close with CC because I feel very comfortable with CC. I think it depends on the matchup personally. And I think where they're playing, just the situation, I think, will dictate all that also and could also be in that decision. But I think Sonny Gray and CC are right there. Although I do believe CC will not be the third starter. I think Tanaka will be. But to me, my confidence level, Tanaka's four.
Yeah, oh, believe me, I'm with you on that one. But Sabathia is one of these guys that, you know, he's going to leave it all on the field, including his kneecap.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, like, Sabathia is cut from a different cloth. I think Sabathia is just such a competitor, and he's really figured out how to pitch now with what he has left on his arm and his repertoire. And I have a lot of confidence in that. I think he's a very smart guy. I think he's a good baseball guy. And I think that because of that and because of his experience, you know, I just have a ton of confidence in him. And I don't see playoff teams bunting on CeCe Sabathia.
Oh, I mean, if you're a playoff team and you don't bunt on CeCe, I think you're an idiot.
I don't see it happening. Usually these teams are coming out there, they have good bats.
What, are you trying to win the right way, or are you just trying to win?
No, I just don't think this is what happens in baseball. I think a lot of times when teams are not used to doing something, they don't do it, even if they think they can do it.
That's true. No one can bunt anymore. Right. Bunting is gone.
You think that those Houston Astros are going to be up there bunting? I mean, maybe I could see potentially a couple of their guys bunting, but Beltran ain't bunting, McCann ain't bunting, none of their outfielders are bunting. There's just a lot of guys.
What about the pride of Connecticut, George Springer? He might bunt.
Yeah, but he can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and you know, if you're looking at the metrics, then launch angle and BABIP, then you know, I like my chances.
What about
there.
XFIP?
Yeah, all of them. All, you know, throw whatever you want in there.
Before the Yankees were getting shut out by Joe Biagini on Saturday, and then Greg Bird hit a 3-run bomb. Al Leiter was making John Olerud comparisons out there to Greg Bird, so clearly he's a listener of this podcast, because I was saying that Greg Bird reminds me of John Olerud back in February and March.
We did have this conversation in spring training, and I did agree with you. I said I could see the similarities in the body set, like what they are. And this was before Greg Bird, you know, before the shell broke, before everything went bad. And he was like, you know, MVP candidate Greg Bird when he was lighting up spring training. But yeah, the body type, I see the comparisons. I mean, we got to see more from Greg Bird. That's just it. To me, when you're making comparisons like that, if you're just doing it based off like what the player looks like, okay. But John Olerud has way too long of an established career to make that comparison at this point, in my opinion.
Right now, if you had to say who you think Girardi will play in that wild card game, obviously it matters on who is pitching. But right. If we assume it's going to be Minnesota and they're pitching Santana, who's a righty, out of these four players, who does Girardi start? Greg Bird, Matt Holliday, Chase Headley, and Todd Frazier. He can only start three of them.
Frazier's getting the start of third, definitely. So I think the decision is going to be between Holiday playing or not playing. And I think at that point, I think if Greg Bird is still playing well, I think you're going to see him at first base. Because I think there is a tick up with Greg Bird defensively as well. And
overhead,
you have that
definitely
over Headley, and you have that power. You have the power option where Headley doesn't. Headley's been playing well. I don't know what his numbers are over the past like 2 weeks or so. I don't know if he's cooled down, but haven't really. I haven't looked at that. But Greg Bird is swinging a pretty good bat. The power's there. He's hitting the ball out of the park. So I could see Greg Bird getting that start.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I could see Headley getting that start over Holiday as well.
As DH. Yeah, I think. I would agree with you. Because Holiday's just been way too inconsistent since he's come off the DL. He has not looked right, really, since he had one stretch of like 10 games where it looked like Matt Holiday of April and May. But since he came back from that illness, I'm sorry, just Matt Holiday has not looked right.
The other thing about that, if you're talking about a one game wild card, and that's the situation we're talking about, Chase Headley actually gives you a lot of options off of the bench too. So that's a situation where you're looking at a guy who can hit from both sides of the plate. He could play third. He could play first. He could do a lot of different things. He could steal a bag if you need him to steal a bag at a crucial spot.
Crazy. Like,
so that's one of those situations where you're looking at him like he's kind of a Swiss Army knife. Might not be a bad thing to have in your pocket given a situation come up.
I tweeted this out over the weekend when Headley stole another base, but him being kind of a good base stealer is the literal definition of you can't predict baseball, Susan.
Yeah. No, that's a guy you look at and you're like, that guy does not steal bases. 100% not steal bases. Like, we're all like, no problems. The catcher is getting signs, like, no problem. This guy's not going anywhere. The first baseman's yelling that. You know, there's all these things happening, and then all of a sudden he's gone.
Also, for that wild card game, though, you load up on position players. So you might see Tyler Wade get a wild card roster spot because he can come in and pinch run or come in and play second base or anything like that that you might need. It's a game seven, so you don't need all the starting pitchers. You need a bunch of bullpen arms and a bunch of guys that can come in and pinch run.
Yeah. And Tyler Wade will not get in that bat because he just doesn't look like a major league caliber offensive player at this point. But yeah, he can run the bases and he can play defense. Those are the two things that he definitely can do.
You need a guy to steal a base in the eighth or ninth inning, or you need a guy to score from second base on a two out hit. You put in Tyler Wade because he's fast.
The nice thing is that the Yankees have a lot of options. They really do. With given Torreyes out there as well, there's a lot of options for Girardi to make moves. And that's why I'm almost thinking that Headley is almost too... I'll say it, too sexy to be on the to be on the starting lineup, but to not have on that bullpen, because that when you look at how many options
bench,
he gives
the
you the bench, thank you.
But that would be wild if he comes out of the bullpen.
Maybe he could throw too. Who knows? Maybe he's the first position player to pitch too. But he gives you so many damn options that you know, it's almost too appealing not to have him come in to a game, you know, at a different time.
But you know how Girardi loves his veterans, and I think he respects Headley for saying, I will go over and play first base when they traded for Todd Frazier. I think that went a long way with Joe Girardi, and the fact that he's been hitting over 300 since essentially June.
So that will definitely go into the consideration. And again, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Headley was starting and everything was kind of the same and Bird was the guy sitting. It wouldn't surprise me, because then at least you have a left-handed power bat coming off the bench as well, which is also very useful. So look, there's a number of ways he can go. I don't think any one of the ways was, the one thing that would surprise me if Frazier wasn't playing third. I think Frazier is going to play third.
Yeah, again, because Todd Frazier is looking at what Todd Frazier has done defensively, you realize how much better he is than Chase Headley. Defensively.
Yeah.
Defensively. He's a very, and I know I've gotten on Chase Headley. It's mainly for his throwing because he makes a lot of nice plays with his glove. But Todd Frazier is an excellent third baseman.
He is an excellent third baseman. I think he's bigger than a lot of people realize. I feel like when you see him, he doesn't come across as a bigger dude. But he's a tall guy. He's got a good range. He's got a hell of an arm, and he's just got a very good glove. He's got good hands, and being third base, I think that's one of the biggest things, having good hands and being able to make that throw.
One thing I've also noticed, and we've given Didi a ton of love, and it's all deserved because he's 25 home runs. He's been one of the clubhouse leaders on this team, playing a great shortstop. But he's 4 for his last 28. He's in a little bit of a mini slump. Girardi has been keeping him in that 5 or 6 spot, depending on the pitcher, what he's doing. Didi's been usually batting behind Judge and Sanchez. Be interesting, maybe Didi gets a couple days off this week, try and reset him. Obviously, he's going to be starting in that wild card game. Hopefully, he's not in a 4 for 28 slump, though.
Yeah, I just think Didi's such a pro that he'll be fine. It's only he's been so good all season that, you know, he's hitting this little mini slump at a time where, you know, I don't know. Again, I think this last week of the season, I'm not looking too much into what's happening with guys that are struggling, because I feel like big situations can get guys out of things very fast. I think if you're going very well, big situations, depending on the pressure and how you handle it, could put you the other way too. But I think when you talk about playoffs and you talk about a home game against the Minnesota freaking Twins, look, this team should be ready to go. There's no doubt about it. The way that they play at home, they should be ready to go.
Before we get into mailbags, I saw a video, I think it was posted by Fox Sports or A-Rod or something. It was A-Rod on Fox, and he said, he was quoted, because he was asked about how much do you pay attention to your rivals? And he said, once the season ended for me and for Jeter and for Mariano, we were obsessed with what the Red Sox were doing. And the immediate reaction I had was, shut the hell up, A-Rod. Don't say that, please.
Why does he always have to talk about Jeter and the guys like he's one of the guys? Look, A-Rod, everybody likes you as a commentator, minus me. I think you're robotic and annoying. But at the same time, you're not one of the guys. They don't like you. They don't want to be in the same conversation as you. They don't want you talking about them. Just stop. Nobody cares. Do I think Jeter was obsessive over the Red Sox after the season was over? No, I don't. I think you're full of shit. I think it was you, and you're like, oh, well, I am. So Jeter, you know, he's probably bringing Jeter in conversations that he didn't want to be in. He's like, that guy's like, can you just stop talking now? Like, why are you always talking to me? Why are you always right there? Everybody knows that guy. Like, why are you there? Just leave me alone. Like, give me some space. But Jeter's like, probably not going to say it. And he just wants him to shut up and go away, and he just doesn't.
Even if they were all obsessed, just please don't say that, A-Rod. But you're totally right that Jeter, I have no doubt that he wanted, obviously he wanted to win more than anything. And then he didn't want the Red Sox to win after the Yankees were eliminated, but I really doubt that Jeter was checking box scores and being obsessed over the Red Sox. Once the Yankees were out of the playoffs, Jeter probably went home and didn't even turn on baseball.
I don't know about that. I could see him watching it. But at the same time, I think it's hard for these guys to avoid anything that's happening in their sport, even after they're knocked out. Like, I have a very difficult time with them not knowing what happens. Even the people that say they don't know or pay attention, bullshit. You know what happened. You probably watched the game too. But I don't know. It's just such an A-Rod thing to do. Bring in other people. He's a name dropper. Look, he's on a good run right now, okay? Him and J-Lo are great together. They really are. They're perfect. I hope they live happily ever after. I do. Unfortunately, I think if they do live happily ever after, they are going to be all over the media and social media for the rest of my life, which is unfortunate because he's very annoying to me. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sick of him talking about it. But I'll tell you what I'm not sick of. When I do go to a game, I'm buying tickets from SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better and much simpler way to do it. You buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find better seats at the right prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing like quite seeing your favorite team or musician, and SeatGeek gets you closer to the value and gets you closer to the action while saving some bucks. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I've used it 100 times. I use it when I go to Yankee games and I don't already have tickets. That's where I go. It's designed to make your buying ticket experience very simple. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites and compare prices to find phenomenal deals. Best of all, listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the app, the SeatGeek app that is, enter the promo code Bronx, and you get $20 off. Promo code again is Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Good stuff. Let's get to mailbags. The first one is from Michael, and he says, with the likelihood of the Yankees playing in the wildcard game and winning it and advancing to the division series, they will play their first two games on the road in either Cleveland or Houston, assuming that Severino pitches the wildcard game. Do you think it makes sense to start Sonny Gray and Sabathia on the road over Tanaka? We've kind of already answered this question, but we do have a lot of stats here that Dom helped us looked up. Sonny Gray at Yankee Stadium this year, his numbers are actually not that great. 3-3 in 24 innings pitched, 19 hits allowed, 27 strikeouts, and he's pitched to a 4.5 ERA at Yankee Stadium. And he's been very good as a Yankee, so that's even more credence to the fact that maybe you want to start him on the road in either Cleveland or Houston.
Yeah, I think that I think that's a good thing, because I think, one, you're looking at a guy who just started pitching at Yankee Stadium, really, as a home player. So his more of his experience is actually on in different ballparks. You're looking at a guy who has some pretty good numbers on the road as far as the way he can handle a game. I think when you're looking at those two teams, Cleveland, obviously, he's got better numbers on, but Houston, really, it's one bad start, it looks like. So I'm not gonna really go too much into that, because to me that's not big enough sample size. I think Sonny Gray is definitely one of the guys that should be one of the starters in those games for sure, no doubt about it. This goes back to the way that I would set it up, honestly. Like, I like having Tanaka at home. I don't know, for whatever reason, I feel like it's just a comfort level for him. And
look at his home road splits.
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's a big thing. I feel like you got to put him in places to succeed.
Tanaka's home road splits. At home, he's pitched 88 innings to a 3.48 ERA, and on the road, 83 innings to a 6.48 ERA. So he's been twice as bad on the road. Another thing we also have to think about is who Girardi pitches in a potential Game 1 ALDS. That's who would pitch Game 5 if it comes to a Game 5. So do you want Sonny Gray in a Game 5? Do you want Sabathia in a Game 5? Or do you want Tanaka in a Game 5? Because Severino's going to be pitching Game 3, because he can't pitch before Game 3.
So if we're talking about that, then that's where I'm looking at Sonny Gray. I'd rather Sonny Gray get another start
than Sabathia.
I honestly don't think that Girardi, I'm also using my mindset of what Girardi's going to pick, because I'm not the manager, but I think that Sonny Gray's going to pick, or I'm sorry, that Girardi's going to go Sonny Gray over Sabathia. I don't think that's going to be too much of a decision, honestly. I think he's going to go Sonny Gray. I think the bigger decision is if he goes Tanaka or Sonny Gray. I think Sabathia is clearly the third guy here in Girardi's mind.
Oh, I think that the decision is who pitches game two. I think Sonny Gray clearly gets the start in game one. That's why you traded for Sonny Gray, is to pitch a potential game one of a playoff series. But I think who they pitch in game two, Tanaka or CeCe, that will be very interesting.
And that's exactly
again,
it.
More home road splits. CeCe has been better on the road than he has at home, and Tanaka has been better at home than he is on the road. So it looks like, just for matchups, like, Girardi can just say, hey, look at Binder. The Binder tells me what to do here. I'm pitching Sabathia game two, because game two starter's not getting another start in a DS. We've got Severino coming back in game three, and then Tanaka in a game four.
Yeah, if you're looking at the way it's set up like that, then that makes a lot of sense. We'll see how the Binder looks. Let's see how his Binder. I feel like his Binder is completely different than our Binder. I think our Binder has different stats in it. I think he makes up the stats in his Binder, and they may be different. It may have something to do with the temperature in the air and the type of dirt that's on, and how much water was put on the pregame onto the field itself. So I think he's got variations of his Binder, and I have no idea what it says. I don't think anybody does. I think it's a complete mystery, and we'll just see what Joe Girardi does, but it wouldn't put it past me. I do believe the biggest thing is that that if people are having the most confidence in CeCe Sabathia over these three guys, that's not going to happen. Sonny Gray's the guy.
The only time I'll get pissed is if Tanaka gets the game one start of the DS.
Right, but I could also see that happening.
Well, get ready for me to be pissed. What's up next on the mailbags?
So the next is from Zach Waters, and he actually has two questions. He says, do you think it's possible for Boston to give us some of their close game magic? I swear they haven't lost a game in extra innings, and I know there has never been a greater disparity in that category between the two teams fighting for a division. And then I'll read the second one as well, and we'll go at it. Who has been a more fitting last out? Has there been a more fitting last out for Yankees to clinch? Ref Snyder, or maybe would have been McCann or Beltran, A-Rod? Seems like poetic justice when ref pinch hit there.
Yeah, right. Just quickly full circle on the refs. It comes full circle on the Ref Snyder thing. Is that this? We loved Ref Snyder on this podcast, and the way they clinch is a weak ground ball by Ref Snyder playing for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, see, I hated that. Honestly, I wanted him to get a base hit. I didn't want it to end with Ref Snyder.
You sick bastard.
Hitting. Yeah, I did not want it to end with Ref Snyder hitting a ground ball. I wanted Ref Snyder to get on base and then some other freaking scrub on the Blue Jays to get the last out. I don't want Ref Snyder to be the guy.
Gibbons,
and I don't
think he did
Ref
that
Snyder
on
wanted to be the guy.
You think Gibbons pinch hit him
on
purpose?
Yes. I think it was dirty. It was a dirty move. And I was legitimately rooting for the opponent to get a base hit. 100% I was.
The first question that Zach asked is obviously more of an important question. The Red Sox in extra inning games this year, they've played 18 extra inning games. They're 15-3. That is a ridiculous record. And they're 21-17 in one run games, which is good, not great. The Yankees, on the other hand, are 5-6 in extra innings and 17-25 in one run games. So Zach is absolutely right. The one run game discrepancy is the reason the Yankees are not leading the division right now.
It's also interesting when you look at the extra inning games with the Red Sox being 15-3, and then they're only 21-17 with one run games, that you'd feel like those would be closer.
True.
Because extra inning games are primarily one run games.
But they get a lot of big extra innings, you know, three run homer or something like that.
Or if they're on the road, things like, so it can make it look different. But yeah, so it's a interesting stat to look at, kind of contradictory to each other. But yeah, the Yankees have been bad with the one-run games, but I think one thing I'll talk about that is Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman, when this season was going in a not-so-good way, when the bullpen was going in a bad way, when we hit that horrible stretch, our bullpen was bad, and whoever was pitching in the ninth inning couldn't get outs. Chapman blew games, Betances blew games. Like, there were problems happening there. I feel like, at this point, Chapman has refound himself. So I have a lot more confidence in the one run games with the Yankee team that we're throwing out there right now. So I like I'm seeing the one run games and the discrepancy, and it's terrible, and it drove us insane during the season. But when I think about what this team looks like right now and moving into the playoffs, I'm a lot more comfortable in those one run games.
Another thing about the one run games, though, I can recall a few instances where the Yankees were maybe trailing by three or four runs, and then in the eighth and ninth inning, they get it to within one, but they just can't get over the hump. And obviously, that's a one run loss, although it was really more of a blowout, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, the stat that you're trying to pull away from this is when we're talking about close games in the playoffs. I'm pretty sure that's what he's getting at, right?
Yeah.
And when we're looking at that right now with the way that this team is made up and kind of the way that they're going, the bullpen's in a good spot. Like, Joe listened to us last time, and Betances hasn't pitched, I think, in 6 days, unless he pitched today and I didn't realize it. But he hasn't pitched in 5 or 6 days. He hasn't pitched in a while. They've definitely gotten him out of that eighth inning spot for a little bit. They're giving him a breather, trying to get him right. I heard Girardi on Francesa, I think it was Friday, talking that, yeah, they've been doing that. They've been giving him extra bullpen sessions and trying to get on top of what's going on. So they're definitely addressing that situation as best they can. So I'm a lot more comfortable with the way that the bullpen is setting up right now. I think David Robertson is a very crucial spot, pitching extremely well. Chad Green has been freaking lights out and has not faltered. And now we have Chapman going. So you add them to the Betances, of Betances getting back in good form, Tommy Canley, and then, you know, the slew of other guys that they can throw out there for one batter at a time. I have a lot of confidence in that.
Betances did pitch on Sunday. He pitched the eighth inning. He struck out one batter and did not walk anybody, which is good.
Good news. Low pressure situation, right? The Yankees, that game was, I mean, it got back to a 4-run game at that point, but low pressure situation given the circumstances. Good time to get him in, get him right. And before that, he hadn't pitched in a while. So maybe that's a good thing for him to ease back into it for this last week. And that's exactly what we wanted Girardi to do. So good for Joe for doing that.
Finally, he's listening. Yeah. Thanks for the mailbags, everybody. If you want to submit mailbags, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast, at Andrew_Rotondi, and Scott's is at Scott Reinen. Call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. We have a good voicemail line coming up. A lot of people fired up for this wild card victory. Not victory, clinch.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. Shit. We might have to edit that out, Scott. Any last words before we get out of here? And hopefully I didn't just jinx this damn team.
No, it looks like the writing's on the wall. We're playing in the wild card spot. So hopefully just everything sets up nicely and we go. I know September 30th, Saturday. So New York's going to be buzzing this weekend coming into Tuesday. Lots of good stuff this weekend. I know we're going to the wild card game as well. I got 25 tickets. I had some people tweet at me of who want to go to. I think I may have a few extras for the tickets. I'm just selling them what I paid for them just to get a good group there. So if you are interested in going to that wild card game, tweet me, send me a DM, and I'll see if I have extra tickets. And
they're good tickets for a good price too.
Yeah. They're $100. That's what I paid for them. And I'm just selling them for what I paid again. And they're, I think, row 7 and 6 in section 205. So it's in our normal section that we're going to for our outings. And that will be our two sections going into next year as well for all of game events. So yeah, I'm pumped up. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, just let's just hope nothing. Good week of baseball. Just a nice, nice, calm week of baseball going into that game.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
this year. And also, imagine how many games we would be in if Girardi wouldn't freaking wave the white flag with Brian Mitchell after the opposition takes an early lead. Ridiculous. And imagine if Jaime Garcia was out of the freaking rotation and Monty was in. Look, I get Monty struggling, but he's still better than fucking Jaime. Things to imagine.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again guys for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.